Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, hit it.
It's the Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Yeah. Now, Amy Marks Kors, Chris Ronji on KMOX.
A very good morning to all of you, friends. It is Chris and Amy. We are glad you are with us. We go until 1 o'clock today. We do every Monday through Friday, right here on 1120 AM, 98.7 FM, and the free Odyssey app, which we want you to download. You can take the show with you wherever you go. You can listen to us live. You can listen to the podcasts. And with the Cardinals baseball season coming up, good to remember that with the Odyssey app, you can listen to Cardinals games live right there on your phone.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Well, smaller trucks are coming to St. Louis roads in efforts to get rid of the snow and ice. However, the good news is it's getting warmer today and tomorrow, so a lot of this should melt and free up some of these side roads.
And the State of New Illinois Committee continues to push its efforts to secede from Cook County. So there'd be Illinois and New Illinois.
Oh, sounds fun.
Hey, who doesn't like a good secession every now
sure
and then?
Love secession. Loved the show.
Oh, that show secession?
Yeah, secession. That's what it should have been. Not succession. Secession. And we did get word within the last 15 minutes that a baseball legend, Bob Uecker, has passed away.
You know, to do the job. So my mother made me one. Out of a flour sack. And the tough thing about that is you put that baby on, you whip it out of your bag in the gym, and, you know, all the guys are looking at it, and you start the game, and the guy guarding you knows exactly where you're going because little specks of flour keep dropping out.
That's Bob Uecker, Hall of Fame speech, talking about a homemade jockstrap, which I don't think it would... Probably wouldn't work very well.
Out of a flour sack. I was like, what did he make out of a flour sack?
It's sad, but it's also, it's the kind of person that when they pass away, you know the memories of mm-hmm. that person and what people are going to talk about today and for the days to come and leading up to the baseball season. And certainly for Brewers fans who developed a very close attachment with him over the decades, just so many stories. You know, we talk about baseball stories, and for whatever reason, it feels like baseball as a sport lends itself to stories, to players having stories and coaches having stories. Maybe more than the other sports, and I've always wondered if it's because there's so much downtime in baseball that there is opportunity for players, guys in the dugout or in spring training and practice or whatever, to just to be silly and to think of things to mm-hmm. say and to think of jokes to make and pranks to play on one another. And I've always felt that way about the game. And there may not be anybody in the sport in my lifetime that is more quotable, right, other than like maybe Yogi Berra. But Bob Uecker is probably number one. Here's this quote that is attributed to him that I'm not exactly sure when he said this, but the quote is, "The highlight of my career, in 67 with St. Louis, I walked with the bases loaded to drive in the winning run of an inter-squad game in spring training. Baseball hasn't forgotten me. I go to a lot of old-timers games, and I haven't lost a thing. I sit in the bullpen and let people throw things at me, just like old times." And he's the first player in any sport that I can think of that was so self-deprecating that was part of his act. But part of the thing about Bob Uecker was letting people know that he knew he wasn't a very good major league ball player. He was a good baseball player. Make no mistake about that. You don't make it to the big leagues unless you are a good ball player. But he only played in really, what, less than 300 games over the course of 6 years. He played a couple of the years here in St. Louis in the 60s. This is a, Amy, this is the kind of baseball name that is a household name.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. And what's funny is, even as a kid, before I knew who Bob Uecker was as a baseball player, I knew him because of his quotes. Kind of like Yogi Berra, you don't have to be a baseball fan to know multiple Yogi Berra's quotes. And, you know, our, you know, KMOX alum, friend of KMOX, Bob Costas, worked with Bob Uecker for a long time. And Bob Costas, when at the Hall of Fame, he got the Ford C. Frick Award in broadcasting, he had a ton of jokes about working with Uecker and how he pointed out, he goes, he celebrated his just how great his announcing career and the gap between his success in broadcasting and his, quote, lackluster career as a player. And he said, you know, how Uecker led the league and passed balls as a catcher, and he also one time did escape a rundown against the Phillies.
That's I love Bob Uecker, and you know, that's that self-deprecating thing.
Yeah,
is I love that because
so endearing.
It really is, and it became a thing that you can make fun of yourself because it's such a hard thing to do, especially if you're a professional athlete. And, you know, you've probably grown up Little League, high school, wherever you played after that, if you play in college, and you're the best on your team. You know, you're the best on your team. Yeah. You make it to the big leagues and you realize, oh, my God, there are guys who are so much better than I'll ever be. So to be able to flip that switch and realize, you know, here's a way that I can, and I don't think that he did this intentionally. I think this was just his natural sense of humor that he just decided, I'll make fun of myself. There was a story about him catching a knuckleball where he was asked the best way to catch a knuckleball. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know what that is, it's a pitch that has zero spin on it. So the air movement, as the ball is heading toward the plate, the air plays with it a little bit and it will dance. And it is very difficult for a catcher to catch those pitches. Like sometimes there are catchers who specialize in catching knuckleballs.
So I will say this just as a side note, not knowing a lot about baseball, I do know this because my dad was a pitcher, college baseball, played college ball, and he said he never threw a knuckleball in a game because it was too unpredictable, but he could throw one.
Yeah.
So every now and then he would do that for us.
Yeah,
and it's
so
weird. It looks so weird.
As a pitcher, you don't know where it's going. because spin is the thing that allows it to cut through the air and you kind of have an idea of where it's going to go. But a knuckleball, you don't. You know, you're throwing it at the plate and you just, it dances.
It bounces.
It bounces.
Looks like it bounces, yeah.
And he was asked how you catch a knuckleball and he says, well, I wait till it stops rolling and I pick it up. Just such a funny line.
It's funny. And the thing is to be self-deprecating, self-effacing, but to have the wit to match it and to be clever with it. Is really charming, and I think it draws people in.
Bob Uecker was 90 years old, and he was still broadcasting Brewers games. He didn't do a full slate. He wasn't doing all of the schedule. But it's, again, you know, we've had guys, broadcasters here who have done it. You know, Mike Shannon did it until he couldn't do it anymore. Jack Buck, same thing. It is the kind of profession that when you get a job like that, and you're ingrained with a team and the fan base has a relationship with you, you can have that job until you just simply don't want to do it anymore or can't do it anymore. And there are very few better examples of a person who was the baseball team as much as Bob Uecker. Jack Buck was the Cardinals for a long time. Mm-hmm. So were other guys, Ozzie Smith and so forth.
Yeah,
But to have a broadcaster who is part of the team, Ernie Harwell, you know, Vin Scully with the Dodgers, Bob Uecker is as great of an example or was as great an example of a broadcaster who was as much a part of the team as any player or manager ever was.
Yeah. No, that's So true. And I know this is the analyst side of things, as well as play-by-play. But Mike Shannon, I mean, it just embodied that so well. But I do, like you said, it's sad that Bob Uecker has passed. He lived 90 years, full 90 years, which is incredible, a full 90 years. So I think there's some solace in that, is that it was such a full life. But I do look forward to all of the stories that are going to come out, stories that you both forgot and stories that you never heard.
It's the stuff you forgot, because a lot of this has been out there, right? Yeah. And maybe there will be some things that you have never heard before, but there may not be a baseball personality.
Yeah.
Bigger than Bob Uecker that I can think of right off the top. And you mentioned Yogi Berra. We talked about him briefly. That's another one. But this guy, this was somebody. He was in a sitcom. He was in a sitcom that was kind of popular in the 80s that I used to watch.
Yeah.
Right? That's awesome. We're talking about baseball royalty here. And it's sad. We lost Bob Uecker at the age of 90. We found out about it just right before the show started. So if you have memories of him or any thoughts on that, you are welcome to let us know. On the Odyssey app, we have a voice message feature, which you can record a message and send it to us. You can also text the show at 314-436-7900. We will have Major Garrett on the show at the bottom of the hour. We've got a transition. Joe Biden is wrapping up his term. Donald Trump is about to begin his second. That will start on Monday. So we're going to talk to Major Garrett at the bottom of the hour. Bernie Miklas will be on the show. Good to talk to him, too, because, of course, he knows all about Bob Uecker. So we will talk to Bernie as well. That's all coming up. Chris and Amy on KMOX.
While we have followed the city's existing playbook for responding to winter storms, with street department crews pulling long hours, this weather calls for a change in tactics. Our plow trucks are huge, and in the past, the city has not plowed residential streets in order to avoid damaging cars and potentially burying them. Simply put, it could make matters worse. So be on the lookout for smaller trucks from multiple city divisions dropping salt onto residential streets, in addition to our street department snow plows treating wider residential streets where they can fit.
That is Mayor Tishara Jones. Part of her message on social media that she released yesterday, saying that the city is hiring smaller trucks from other city departments to take care of these, they're technically secondary thoroughfares, but I would argue major thoroughfares like a McPherson in front of Metro High School, or you're looking at Russell and Soulard, and some streets like McPherson that are not narrow, that are not small. We talked yesterday, Ranj, about after 11 days of being snowbound, we had a caller call from North St. Louis say she's afraid to go outside. She can't get out. Her street's covered with ice. An ambulance got stuck. It's a huge public safety issue, and I'm glad that the city is getting smaller trucks now from other city departments. I am a little peeved as to why it took, I should say a lot of peeved. Yesterday, I got radicalized by the snow. I'm a lot of peeved of why it took 11 days. 11 days of people not being able to leave their homes. Those who are elderly not being able to make doctor's appointments. Those don't have who don't have the financial means to pay for private plows or buy a four-wheel drive car or don't have the social network to get picked up, being absolutely stuck. To me, it's unacceptable. I'm glad they're getting the smaller trucks now, but why now? Why after 11 days?
So my understanding from talking, and I've had several friends who live in Soulard where some of the streets are very narrow, the side streets, and a few of them live on streets that are still unplowed and they're icy and it's kind of difficult to get around. From what they are telling me, every time there's a snowstorm or some kind of winter storm, this is what happens to them, except usually the cold doesn't last as long as it has lasted here. This is their anecdotal evidence they're telling me. So my guess is the city wasn't prepared or didn't think that the snow, that the really icy stuff would, or that it would be so cold for so long that they wouldn't be able to break it up like they're going to do with the trucks now. They say they're salting, that they're going to put the they're going to drive the trucks over the ice, hopefully to break it up so that the driving conditions are a little bit better. I think they were expecting that to happen sooner than it did. It doesn't mean it's not a mistake, and it doesn't mean they weren't on top of it or that they were on top of it. But my understanding is that's kind of how it goes, especially in neighborhoods where the streets are hard to navigate.
Yeah, I'm also surprised that the city leaders were bragging about the amount of salt they have. They said it's not a shortage because there were some rumors, right? Like, I think we're short on salt, understandably, because roads weren't getting treated. And they said, no, we've got tons of salt. And they stood in front of the giant pile of salt, which is great. So why weren't you salting then smaller roads? Why weren't you treating on these days when it hit 50 degrees? Because there was a lot of snow, wintry mix and ice. I think that's a huge question. I also don't understand. I think it's tone deaf to say we've done a great job when you haven't, when alder people are saying, what is going on? We need to call a meeting. When residents are talking to the news, like I said, KSDK had a sad story about just people in North City just stuck, elderly residents. We had talked to callers saying, no, this has been a disaster. And also that the city said they cleared in front of schools. Well, I don't know what schools you cleared in front of, but you didn't clear in front of, your premier St. Louis High School. Metro High School is awesome. You didn't clear in front of it. You didn't clear in front of the school on Olive, which is super wide, and now elementary-aged kids are trudging through a full lane, knee-high of snow. So you do feel like you're being gaslit by the leaders when they're saying we did such a great job.
Look, I don't live in an area where it's been bad. So for me personally, it's difficult to sympathize with the bad driving conditions. I haven't had them in the Central West End. For a little bit, West Pine was, it was a little rougher than it should have been, but it's been good for several days now. I don't live in one of these side streets that's really tough to get down.
I know.
Right. So it's,
yeah.
I don't know. I do think that there probably was more that the city could have done. And certainly we're talking about the smaller trucks that can get down those side streets, and they have purchased a fleet of them. Mm-hmm. But it is, like I said yesterday, we've talked about it a number of times. It is the kind of thing that people, the city has to plan ahead for these events, which means they have to spend money to get ready for these events months, if not a year or so ahead of time. So people have to be ready and willing to be proactive. They have to be willing to say, yeah, I totally get it, City of St. Louis. You're buying a fleet of small trucks in April. I get it. Yeah, you should, because we might need them when November, December, or January roll around. They have to be willing to do that. But I think that the appetite for things that are down the road is not really as strong as dealing with stuff that is going on right this second.
Mark Maxwell of KSDK also noted that Mayor Tishara Jones is in Washington, D.C. for a campaign fundraiser. And I think on the heels of the story from the St. Louis Business Journal about 64 trips in 42 months, how that frustrated people. And Connor Kerrigan, the spokesperson for the mayor, said that a lot of those trips were to advocate for St. Louis. This is specifically a campaign fundraiser. These are campaign funds she's trying to raise. It's apparently not unusual for local politicians to go to D.C., try to appeal to lobbyists that operate within their city, within their areas. You know, say the lobbyists that are in D.C., come meet the mayor of St. Louis, fundraise. A lot of times when local politicians are brought to D.C., it is by the big funders of their party. So a lot of, like, most likely, Mayor Jones can be brought to D.C. by big progressive donors, or for GOP candidates, they could be brought to D.C. by big GOP national donors as well. So that in and of itself is not completely unusual. This was probably planned weeks ago. I think, how optics matter, and also that the mood of people matters. The mood of people is not great. The super cynic in me, right, is like, wonder if she got the small trucks yesterday because she knew she was going to D.C. today and knew I better do something before I leave the city to deal with the ice. To me, that's where I'm like, man, if you've got residents of your city still stuck, still dealing with ice and snow, stay with the people of St. Louis. But maybe that's why she got the trucks yesterday, of all days, because she knew she was leaving town. I don't know.
Alderwoman Kara Spencer, who is running against the mayor this year, and apparently has done pretty well in fundraising herself. Yeah. At least those are the numbers we're getting now. She had an Instagram post, social media post yesterday of the five things that she thought, and it's too long to really go through and read, but she was highly critical of what the city's effort has been. I will take her at her word that she is earnest about these things, and it's not just a political thing that she is trying to set up so that it is an attack point for her when her campaign, or as her campaign continues. So I believe she's earnest about these things. But it's stuff like pulling qualified drivers from other departments to supplement, that it wasn't happening before, it is happening now. Using the salt that they are sitting on right now that they have not been. I know that one of the representatives from the city said they did not salt ahead of time because they expected rain, and the rain would have just washed the salt away, which... I think it did rain a little bit. What, it sleeted that first night? Wasn't there some sleet and a little bit?
It was a full wintry mix. Sleet, yeah. Ice, and snow.
I'm not a street expert. I have no idea how this stuff is supposed to work. But at least one alder person here in the city is criticizing, and I think actually multiple alder people are. That's Amy Marks-Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. As we mentioned, the transition is happening from the Biden administration to the Trump administration. A lot of stuff is happening in Washington right now. And when we come back, Major Garrett, chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, joins us next. Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News is Major Garrett, and he is with us on this Thursday. Also the author of The Big Truth, Upholding Democracy in the Age of the Big Lie. Got a couple of really good podcasts, one called The Takeout. The other is The Agent of Betrayal. Huge Led Zeppelin fan, a guy who hates the Chargers. Major Garrett is with us on KMOX. How's it going, Major?
I'm very well. Wow, we have a title for this segment now, and an audio bug. That's very nice. I feel very complimented and honored. I'm overwhelmed.
You have finally arrived.
I think I have. I think this is it.
You've made it.
I think I have reached the summit. And the snow-capped summit. I've seen the promised land.
Yes.
And again, it occurs to me I'm wearing a Led Zeppelin shirt. This is not on purpose.
Okay,
this is twice now,
buddy.
It's happened.
All right.
Well, Major, so this is the President Biden gave a speech, his farewell address yesterday. Donald Trump will be inaugurated on Monday. In the days leading up to the new administration, what's it like in Washington?
First of all, it's very cold, and everyone knows it's going to be very cold on Monday. Very cold, 10 to 14 degrees for inauguration morning. Maybe a high that day of 20 degrees when President Trump gives his inaugural address. So it's going to be very cold, and everyone is sort of bracing for that. And it's been a very odd week so far. I don't think it's possible to overstate the unique nature of the collaboration of the Biden administration and the incoming Trump administration on the Israel-Gaza ceasefire. There's a lot of bluster and acrimony that comes from President-elect Trump about the Biden administration. Some of it is intentionally overheated. Some of it is justifiable expression of differences about policy and direction. But on this, a sitting administration for the U.S. government empowered Steve Witkoff, an incoming envoy of the next administration, to be a collaborator with them, to be a co-partner with them in conversations about achieving this ceasefire and hostage deal. That's very, very unusual. Extremely unusual. Yes, Trump announced it first, is trying to gather the lion's share of credit, whatever. Two administrations working together, one outgoing, one incoming, to try to get something done, to free hostages, to stabilize the region, and to essentially create a very complex structure negotiated by the outgoing administration largely because the terms were set 8 months ago by President Biden, and that will have to be implemented by the next administration. That is, historic might be too strong a word because we don't know how resilient, how durable this agreement is going to be. But what is unique and worth praising and just taking on board is, in a time when we just assume that the default in American politics is disagreement, aggravation, and alienation on something of importance, not only in the region, but to the Americans still held hostage, these two groups work together and productively and are within the contours and limits of American political dialogue, willing to give each side some credit.
And just as a quick note, Major, right now the deal is in limbo, correct? That
yes.
Israel's not voting yet, saying that Hamas went back on the offer. Where are we, as far as you know, with that?
So that's an hour-by-hour situation in Israel, and the Knesset and the composition of the Israeli government, that's a coalition government with a lot of hardliners, very skeptical of any deal with Hamas under any sets of conditions. And the Netanyahu-led government is trying to create time to negotiate its way through. But with the endorsement of President Biden, with the endorsement of incoming President Trump, Benjamin Netanyahu knows and will probably tell his hardliners, look, two American presidents, one outgoing, one ingoing, were involved in this. They have both supported it. They expect us to follow through on this. And we're going to have to see this through to implementation. That's going to be a political high wire act for the Netanyahu government and for Benjamin Netanyahu. The delay is not good news. It creates anxiety for everyone here in Washington. President Biden, probably those in the Trump transition team, and certainly Secretary of State Antony Blinken, who's just finished up a briefing at the State Department saying it is imperative that this deal be implemented. And it is a complex deal with many points of evaluation and further implementation. It doesn't all happen at once. It goes in phases, and everyone has to be satisfied phase by phase by phase. All of that is difficult. Most negotiations in the Middle East require steps like that to establish trust, establish credibility and believability before you get to the next level. But you can't even begin that process unless the Israeli government agrees to it, and that's the holdup right now.
Speaking of foreign policy and shifting to Ukraine, yesterday House Speaker Mike Johnson relieved Republican Mike Turner from his position as the House Intelligence Chair. So what sort of implications does that have, knowing Turner was pretty pro-Ukraine?
Yeah, so there are a lot of dimensions to that, and we don't know all of them. I don't know all of them, and a lot of my colleagues here at CBS News are digging around this. Johnson has on the record declared it wasn't because of pressure from the Trump transition team, because there's lots of belief that it was. And that does not augur well for Ukraine or the idea that the chair of the House Intelligence Committee would not be a complete Trump loyalist in every shape and form. It is worth pointing out, as a practical matter, the chair of that committee is at the discretion of the Speaker of the House. The chair can be removed for any reason or no reason by the Speaker. That's just the way the process has been established. So it's within the power of the House Speaker to do this. But it does raise questions, why are you doing it? As for Ukraine, I don't know what the disposition of the incoming Trump administration is going to be. I know, as the president-elect has said, he wants this war to be ended. On what terms? And how does that factor through all sorts of things? How does that factor with a meeting very soon with Putin, which the president-elect says he desires? How does that reflect through President-elect Trump's desire to have conversations again with the North Koreans, who now not only have troops there, but apparently are in the battle space and have died on behalf of Russia for Ukraine, something I don't think anyone would have put on their bingo card a year ago? That adds another layer of complexity to what will be resolved in Ukraine. The last thing I'll say about Ukraine, and this is going to be true whether this war ends during the Trump administration or continues on past the Trump administration. Whenever peace is achieved, someone not based in Russia and not based in Ukraine is going to have to ensure that peace. That means peacekeeping troops. I don't see how there's any kind of cessation of hostilities if it's only left to the Ukrainians and the Russians. There's going to have to be some internationally established buffer line, like there is in North and South Korea, like there have been in other areas of conflict, and working that out and deciding who stands on that line, who gets paid to do that, who takes the risks for that to ensure peace between Russia and Ukraine is going to be the hardest thing to negotiate. And I don't think we have clarified the desires, the issues, the costs, the pay-fors, the negotiations on any of that. But that's a reality, and that's what's coming if and when peace is achieved between those two countries.
Major, any developments or betting odds on Trump AG nominee Pam Bondi, as well as Pete Hegseth and Secretary of Defense?
So I don't think there's anything blocking Pam Bondi from being confirmed. Republicans are solidly for her. You need four Republicans to vote no. I don't see four Republicans who have even suggested that they're even the slightest bit undecided on Pam Bondi. As a former state attorney general in Florida, a state that has grown progressively more Republican, certainly during the Trump influence on American politics, both in that state and nationally, I just don't see anything stopping Pam Bondi. The imperative for Senate Republicans was not Matt Gaetz. That's been achieved. So it just falls easily for a confirmation for Pam Bondi. Pete Hegseth was in real jeopardy in December. He is not any longer. Joni Ernst was the one on the Senate Armed Services Committee who could have been a no vote, who could have been someone up for grabs. She is not up for grabs. Senator Curtis, the incoming replacement from Utah of Mitt Romney, already on board. I don't see anything stopping Pete Hegseth. Now, that doesn't mean that Pam Bondi is going to be a great attorney general or Pete Hegseth is going to be a great secretary of defense, but you can't learn any of those things about their abilities until they're confirmed, and I think both are on the path. Certainly Pam Bondi, and unless there is a very dramatic shift in the politics or the understanding of who Pete Hegseth is, he's likely to be confirmed also.
Is there much chatter at all about the pending TikTok ban? And that for a while it seemed that both President Biden and incoming President Trump were on the same page on that. What's the talk now?
So the CEO of TikTok will be at the inauguration on the platform with Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg and others in the tech space. There has been some conversation. The Trump transition team has been very opaque about this, about some sort of executive order to delay implementation of a law passed by Congress, overwhelming bipartisan majorities, signed by President Biden. It's the law of the land. There was an argumentation before the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court did not seem very inclined to support TikTok's request that that law be ruled unconstitutional. So the law is on the books, goes into effect January 19th, that if it is not sold by ByteDance, its parent company, to an American company, it must be banned. And the process of banning it will take several days and weeks for people to decouple from the app and otherwise, but it goes into effect. What Trump wants to do about that and why is now somewhat of an open question. But TikTok has, in America, I'm not sure what the exact latest numbers are, but in excess of 150 million subscribers who are on that platform. And many of them use it a lot and have grown very accustomed to it and enjoy it. And there's a lot of economics that flows through TikTok. There's a fair amount of politics and culture. It's a very popular platform. But it is on the brink of being banned under federal law. And it doesn't look like the Supreme Court's going to stop it. The only thing that could would be some kind of intervention by the Trump administration. But that intervention, should it come, will be on very slippery legal ground.
Major, who is on the podcast this week?
So H.W. Brands is an author based in Texas. He is one of America's great writers on history and politics. Won several awards. Brilliant guy. He has a new book out about something that, when I read the title of it, America First, will resonate. Not about America First now. It's about America First during World War II and the clash between Charles A. Lindbergh and Franklin Delano Roosevelt about World War II and what America First meant back then and how it informs what we should think about America First now.
Major Garrett, we are looking forward to speaking to you again next Thursday. Congratulations.
After I've thought out.
After you've thought out, yes. You're going to be okay. Wear a coat. Get those. You have those earmuffs that don't cover.
Wear a coat. He says the wise guy here. Wear a coat.
Wear a coat. Get some gloves. Do you have those
degrees? Wear a coat.
Hold on.
Thanks,
Major.
Thanks, Major.
Do you have those earmuffs that go around the back of your head that they don't cover up your hair?
Oh yeah.
I do not.
And some battery powered socks.
Socks.
And battery powered pants.
Yes.
I think if you get battery powered pants, you'll.
Yeah. So. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, let me walk you through this. You see, there's an agency called the Secret Service.
Uh-oh.
I didn't think about that.
they make us put all of our things through a scanner, and when they see batteries and things, you know what? They don't like it.
They don't like it. Oh, my gosh. The Secret Service is tackling CBS Chief Washington correspondent. You're right, Major.
We don't want that to happen to you.
You are so right.
The old-fashioned stuff. Lots of layers, kids.
Well, enjoy the cold. After you thaw out, we will talk to you on Thursday.
We will talk next week. Be well, everybody.
See you.
Bye-bye.
I didn't even think about that. They would jump on him.
What is that? Major Garrett's got a bomb.
He's a walking bomb with all the batteries.
Gun. No, it's just Major Garrett.
It's his battery-operated pants.
All right. Major Garrett, Chief Washington correspondent for CBS News, with us every Thursday morning after the 10:30 news. Listen to his podcast, The Takeout, An Agent of Betrayal. You can catch him on the Odyssey app, where you can also listen to this show live. It's Chris and Amy.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Well, Ronj, bad news if you have to go pee-pee.
I don't right now.
Starbucks is scrapping its policy that let anyone just hang out at its cafes or use restrooms without making a purchase. The new rules are part of a larger effort to improve the cafe experience and also to deter homeless people and non-paying customers who just come in, use the bathroom, and use Starbucks for shelter. I know in 2020, 2021, it became a huge thing that Starbucks would let anyone sit there, let anyone use the bathroom, which sounds really nice, but it can also become a public safety issue, a public health issue, a sanitation issue, and it also just, for paying customers, kind of ruins the experience for them. I know, personally, I've stopped going to a Starbucks because the experience, this certain location, devolved so much because while your heart does go out to unhoused people, if they were sitting there spreading out all their stuff or taking a long time in the bathroom, it just didn't work. There wasn't room to work. It didn't feel necessarily sanitary because, unfortunately, sometimes they don't have the ability to clean up after themselves, but at any rate, you do have to buy something to go to the bathroom, which I think is standard practice for most places.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't care one way or the other. I know there were a lot of people making a big deal about the policy. It doesn't affect me. It didn't affect me. I've been into a lot of Starbucks. Yeah. I wish I would go to other coffee shops more, which I do. Mm. I try to. But, you know, it just when I was in and sometimes a lot of times, actually, you go into one and there's somebody who clearly is just there hanging out. I don't care. I don't care. Doesn't bother me.
Well, and sometimes, though, too, it put the baristas in a bad spot because I was getting harassed by the homeless people. And so it's one of those things where I feel bad and I gave the person money a couple of times, which you can say, well, that's your fault. But I didn't realize that they would be there every day and would just harass you and just keep telling you a story. And you're just, I had to pack up my bag and leave. I couldn't work. So is there always another Starbucks? Yes. But I also think it puts the baristas in a potentially unsafe working conditions if they're having to deal with that, clean up after that, and try to mitigate situations.
Got bad news for you, Amy. You're afraid of spiders, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so. Roaches more than spiders.
Have you seen that, first of all the dangerous animals are in Australia? We know that.
Australia is trying to kill you at all times.
Yeah, every animal that can kill you is in Australia.
Bug, everything.
Scientists there have discovered a new species of a funnel web spider that is bigger and more venomous than its relatives. They are nicknaming it Big Boy.
Big Boy?
Oh, big boy.
Get a load of that, big boy.
So research released this week, scientists from the Australian Museum of Flinders or Flinders University, I have no idea.
I think Flinders.
Sure. They have discovered three species of Sydney funnel-webbed spiders. They have named the 3.5-inch-long species Atrax Christensen-y, with a nickname of Big Boy.
Big Boy. And more
venomous.
And they're
very, very venomous. They can hurt you.
Listen, God bless Australia.
Look at you, Big Boy.
Yeah, God bless Australia.
What is the name of the...
But it's trying to kill you.
Isn't it... Is Big Boy the name of the...
yes.
The fire engine? The Not fire engine, but the train engine?
Yeah.
Isn't it called the Big Boy?
Yep.
I think so.
We had it roll through town right toward the end of Cardinal season. Giant thing came through, and there were people lining the tracks up the state to watch it pass by.
Well, I wonder if you are at the Australia Open, which is going on right now, Australian Open, one of the major tennis tournaments. Let us know if you saw Big Boy.
Hey, Big Boy.
Hey, Big Boy.
I love you
right back. That's my nickname.
I love calling the spider Big Boy.
What's up, Big Boy?
Hey, when we come back, CBS correspondent live from Jerusalem, Robert Berger, will join us because of that deal between Israel and Hamas. And apparently there's a snag now. It was agreed upon and now it hasn't been. So we will get the latest on that when we come back on KMOX.